Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 28th. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today, and joining us, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. We welcome your gardening calls right now at 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Always a popular show, this is, so best to call in early, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.com. .org, but again, the number, and jot it down, 800-348-2551. Fred and Greg and the Gardening Show. It begins after the news. Hi, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us for the Gardening Show today, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, and Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. This is a popular program full of information, so if you want to get your questions answered, I suggest you call in early. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. I'll be manning the email box. You know, I do the best I can. We'll try to get to as many as we can. We have a few already. So if you want to email, best to do that early as well. Otherwise, call. We like that on a call-in show. 800-348-2551. Fred and Greg, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Beautiful day.
It is. Yeah, after the last few days, it's welcome relief from some of that heat, too.
I am definitely relaxed. I just couldn't take the heat, I have to say. It was just too much.
Yeah. Well, it's nice. It'll be cooler tomorrow.
Yep.
Great time to get out there and do some stuff. What should we be doing now?
Well, you know, fall is a great time to plant. So planting is still really, really good. It has been dry. So anything that you do plant, you really want to make sure you water in.
Yeah.
And when we do talk about watering in, trees that have actually been installed even the last few years could use water when we start. I mean, it's hard to believe we had so much moisture and then it goes this dry. But
yeah,
this time of year is when trees will store water and nutrients for next year's leaf out. So one of the best ways I always tell people this time of year to get water on those trees to help ensure winter survivability and a good leaf out next year is to drop water down now. And that's not just for newly planted trees and shrubs. It also is for actually even mature plants, things that you really want to give an extra boost to.
Yeah.
Because it's really easy to sort of forget about those things. So
it is.
I have a few things in my yard that I put in last year, year before, and they were looking great all summer. Finally, I said, "Oh, I'm over it. They can just take care of themselves." And then this last week, I've had to start rewatering them again.
Exactly. Yep. You really. And this time, they're pulling nutrients. They're pulling in water. They really are all about storage right now. A lot of people think, well, they're shutting down. There's nothing. I'll leave them alone. But even though the leaves are dropping off, the roots are pulling material and they're not dormant yet, and they won't be until the ground really pretty much freezes.
Great time to weed, though, kind of clean. I mean, it's easy, especially with this weather, to get out there. Things won't be sticking to you anymore. So cleaning up that last bit of weeding, a little bit of edging, mulching for the season, excellent things to do.
Fred Breglia is here and Greg Ward. It's the Gardening Show. And before we get to the phones, gentlemen, a few emails that have come in the last 45 minutes or so. This one is from Ann, and oh boy, looks like problems there. Several pests have attacked my organic garden, especially eating all my brassicas.
Yep.
They are cabbage butterflies, and now a gray covering spreading over my Brussels sprouts. I see a lot of small black granules, caterpillars, light brown, very fuzzy with small black stripe, and on the broccoli, small multicolor worms with yellow and black stripes. On the back of collards are colonies of very tiny beige-white creatures in a film-like conglomeration. What are these pests? What are the organic solutions? I bought ladybugs back in midsummer, but they only helped briefly, and that's from Ann in New Paltz.
Wow, that sounds actually really exciting. I mean, I think we should all visit her.
I don't know if Ann is so excited about it.
So here we are at the end of September. Possibly a lot of these plants are finishing up. Broccoli, unless you have a late planting, is going to pretty much peter out. But the Brussels sprouts are coming on. The kale is certainly going to go on for a while. The first thing I would consider, if you literally do have all of these insects on there, is can you collect them? Very first, I mean, if you have four kale plants, it wouldn't take you too long to go out there and just sort of pick all of those caterpillars.
But they'll come back, though, right?
No, because they were egg masses that hatched out on the plant from some moth or other bug. They're crawling around there. They're not coming from the neighbor's yard. They're right there. They're local, very local. So if you can clean them up, then you pretty much are done. If you've got, you know, a half an acre of kale, then that takes a little more work. Insecticidal soap, still probably one of the best things to use as an organic spray for leafy things. For a lot of those soft-bodied things, there's a thing called spinosad, which is the active ingredient, common variety or common name, usually referred to as Captain Jack's, I think is a brand of that product. Both of these things are contact sprays. Will kill those soft-bodied insects. The film, I'm not so sure about. I have no real idea about what that is. Is it powdery mildew? We talked about that the last time.
It's certainly around right now. On Brussels sprouts, she said, right?
Yeah, which sounds odd.
That's a little odd for Brussels sprouts to see powdery mildew. So.
It is actually. When she said the film, I wonder if it's webbing. Fell on there. So those caterpillars may be part of the webbing. So, again, physically cleaning up the small, you know, if you have a few plants, treating them with those two products would work pretty well.
Okay. And this one came in from Aaron. Says, hi, guys. I recently got married. Congratulations. Spent my honeymoon high up on Mount Hood in Oregon. Now, my wife and I want to start a garden at home with many of the wildflowers and shrubs we saw there. Can you help me identify the attached bush? I think it's either an azalea or mountain laurel. What do you guys think?
Mountain laurel was my first guess on that flower.
Sort of pink flowers.
Mount Hood, it would be there in that area.
Or it's another laurel-like plant that is probably not going to work for us. I need a little bit better picture, and if they wanted to email it to us, but I bet you that... That plant would have a hard time here.
What is your email address?
gward@wardsnursery.com.
All right, so send the picture of the...
If you did, then we could look it up a little bit.
And another way to theme this would be, and I've worked with people when they want to, you know, we're from a certain area, we love those plants, how can we get them to live here? Well, they don't live here. But there are varieties of laurels that will look very similar, that will absolutely be very hardy for our area. So they might not be able to get the exact species that they're after from Mount Hood.
But they get the effect.
But they can get the effect, and then they'll always be able to have that little memory of there. And they can recreate almost everything that they've probably found there with something that would be related that would be hardy in our zone.
All right.
Same with the wildflowers, yeah.
Yep. Okay, and we'll get to the phones in a moment, but a couple of more emails here. Our number is 800-348-2551. Still two or three open lines, and then we'll get to the phones. This one's from Ashley, and the subject heading is help!
Okay.
I recently moved to a beautiful 2.5-acre property with fruit trees and landscaped areas all along the perimeter of the house and have no idea how to properly maintain any of it. I don't know what many of the flowers and bushes are around the house, when or whether the trees and plants need to be pruned, etc. I have a terrible black thumb, but really want to maintain the beauty of our outdoor space. Should I hire someone to advise me on how to get started? Where would I find such a person? That's from Ashley.
Okay. Well, you know, certainly having an on-site consult would help clarify a lot of that, especially if you got a very knowledgeable person in there. But a lot of the times people can send me pictures of things at Landis Arboretum, and I can very quickly tell them what those plants are, and I'd be happy to assist with that. So if they wanted to send an email, fred@landisarboretum.org, be happy to ID some things for them. That way, they'll at least get them a start.
Your local garden center is a pretty good resource. Yep. The extension cooperative extensions is a really good resource. So certainly trying any of those places. The garden center may do consults, or they may know people, local landscape contractors, arborists that would do that.
All right. Yep. And this one came in from Lisa. When is the best time to relocate or transplant a 3-foot-high spruce tree grown from a seedling? Has been in present location about 8 years.
That's a great one because... Yep. Fall is a great time to move spruce. That said, it's been very dry, as we were just saying. So watering the plant really well, soaking it really well today, maybe doing it again for the next couple of days. So as Fred said, it rehydrates, and then you can actually move it this week.
Okay. Yep.
And even for the next handful of all through October.
Yes.
This one is from Andrew. Do you have any suggestions for the best urban street tree? Any tips to prevent sidewalk upheaval from tree roots? And that's from Andrew.
Well, if we get into the upheaval of sidewalks from tree roots, that gets into another huge discussion that we probably wouldn't have time for in detail on the radio today. But I would say this, there's a lot of factors involved with trees' roots lifting sidewalks. And one of them is dealing with what actually is going underneath the sidewalks. There are things called structural soils. And most arborists today are working with a lot of the cutting-edge cities when they're doing redoing streets, redoing sidewalks. And more and more and more, you're seeing structural soils, which are actually being incorporated. The beautiful thing about a structural soil is that it gives the engineer what he wants, which is to be able to compact that to such a level that the sidewalk's stable. Roads are stable.
Right.
The plant roots need air, they need water, they need a place to grow. Structural soils give the plant what it needs.
Oh, and terrific.
The engineer what it needs. It can be compacted to engineer standards and still enable the roots to actually grow through it, and they wouldn't lift. So
right.
Structural soils are definitely a great way enlarging the tree pits. Not 3x3s, but 5x5s. More and more cities are creating larger tree pits.
That's really probably one of the best things to consider when doing a street trees now is that the old plantings were very small, the old planting pits. And then briefly for trees, big trees, red oak has done quite remarkably well. Red maple, Acer rubrum can also do well. The calorie pear selection, there's the nice newer varieties, the Clevelands, the Chanticleers with the central leader as a blooming plant. And then there are a lot of newer disease-resistant crab apples that can bloom. Sargent cherry is one that works well. Hawthorns. There's a couple of different hawthorns, both Winter King and this Crooksagi hawthorns, which are small, fun, easy to grow.
And relatively thornless in those cases.
Yes.
But I will say another resource for folks that are thinking about street trees, the definitive guide for street trees in our area, a book put out. I'm going to try to recall the name here. It's a long name. It's Urban Trees, a site assessment checklist for stress-tolerant plantings.
How the heck did you remember that?
Photographic memory,
genius,
right?
Genius.
It's written by, if you don't remember this long name, just Urban Street Tree Book by Dr. Nina Basick from Cornell University. It is a simple, very simple guideline. It goes through small, medium, large planting sites, shade, sun, wet, dry, pHs, and ultimate sizes of trees. Inexpensive book, can't tell you enough. Probably even available online, possibly as a PDF, as a download.
Fair enough. Let's take a break here, and then we'll get to the phones. 800-348-2551, the Vox Pop Gardening Show. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from Vermont Coffee Company. Offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores, Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York. Featuring a variety of mums, fall decorations, and bulbs, including bulbs for spring, offering repotting during September, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, Sundays, 9 to 4. A gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. The VNA and Hospice of the Southwest Region. Providing home health and hospice care since 1946 throughout Bennington and Rutland counties, VermontVisitingNurses.org. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, announcing open house October 19th from 5:30 to 7:30, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery and skin care since 1996, 518-786-1700. And NatureWorks Organic Land Care, specializing in innovative ecological landscape construction of outdoor living spaces, all organic food systems and garden features, design, installation, and organic maintenance, natureworkslandcare.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's The Gardening Show. Greg Ward and Fred Breglia join us today. And the number is 800-348-2551. But I got to tell you, the lines are completely loaded now because we answered five emails. And let's get to the phones. You guys ready?
Let's do it. Here we go.
Chuck in Hudson. Chuck, you're on.
Hey, how you doing? I'd like to thank the other man there for the idea that gave me to make my green tomatoes red in the paper bag.
Did it work?
Oh, yeah. 2.5 days.
There you
nice.
Go. You're welcome, and I'm glad it worked out for you. No problem.
How'd they taste?
One more thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're interested in this, but I saw a caterpillar the other day with no black on him at all. Does that mean that we have a good winter?
Oh, I was going to ask you the same thing.
Yeah,
oh. Yeah, I can't remember. Is it all black or all orange?
Yeah, it was just red. The same color as a caterpillar.
Yep.
I'm not sure, but I know the Farmer's Almanac, and I've said this before, and it seemed to have held true before. The Farmer's Almanac's pointing towards another pretty harsh winter,
okay,
from what I've heard. And the apples are really, really out there this year. Great apple year.
I saw a thing on TV, actually. The sound was off in the newsroom, but the warm weather has caused the apples to drop earlier.
Oh, earlier drop. That makes sense because it's starting to shut down, so it's going to...
It was a little bit of stress there.
Sort of facilitate that, make it a little quicker, yep.
All right, over to Carol in Lenox, Massachusetts. Carol, you're on.
Hi, I'm calling about our beautiful blue spruce trees in my yard and my neighbors, and they were so wonderful looking all summer, and then in the last month, I had read or heard somewhere about a beetle or some bug, and ours are attacking, and the leaves are on the bottom. I mean, the branches are looking kind of stripped and kind of forlorn, and I wondered if what to do about it or what is happening, if you know.
Yep. Well, my guess is going to be probably fairly accurate here, and I don't think it's an insect at all. You didn't see any insects on there, of course, right?
No.
No. It's a disease, unfortunately, called needle cast, and it's called needle cast because it kind of casts its needles off. It starts with the lower branches and the interior foliage first. If you have needle cast, the telltale sign is that the growth that is there, the healthiest growth is the very newest growth, the ones on the end of the branches. But the the insides are kind of all shed out.
And exactly.
So it is a fungus that's causing that problem. And it is treatable as long as the branches are not dead. If it's dead, you're not going to be able to bring the dead ones back, but you could certainly keep the live ones alive. And unfortunately, there's no great environmentally friendly organic treatment. It's a it is a spray that would need to be done probably annually. You might be able to get away with every 2 years on those trees. And it's just been really, really bad needle cast on blue spruce, and not just blue spruce, but Colorado spruce as well. So even the green varieties. Over the past 10 years, I've seen an exponential growth, outbreaks of this disease across our area. So it is definitely needle cast. You'll have to call somebody, an arborist or somebody, other company that does spraying.
Carol, you're over in Lenox there?
Yep.
Yeah, so there. If you wanted to email us there at wardsnursery.com, info@ gward@wardsnursery.com, we can give you the names of a few people who would do that.
Yeah, and it is definitely salvageable as long as they're not too far gone.
Let's go to Christine in Mount Tremper. Christine, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I have a question. Someone gave me some long stem roses, and they were beautiful, but when the blossoms fell, I noticed that the nodes were kind of fat. So I cut it down to about 3 inches, and lo and behold, some beautiful green growth started coming out of the nodes. Can I start a rose plant from that?
So in theory, yes. So you have new growth coming from the stem, or you have a root node?
From the stem.
And is it
from one of the nodes on the rose?
Right, and so it's not a root tissue. You didn't have them in the no water
roots.
Didn't generate any root tissue.
No roots.
Yeah, well, I think you can try it. You would want to actually get some roots going. That's the most important part, and that would mean taking a fresh cutting, using a little rooting hormone, which is something you can get
like Rootone.
Exactly,
yep.
Dipping that in there, putting that in a nice well-drained soil. And in a bright spot, I would do it inside at this point, it's cooling down, and try to get those plants to root. This is going to be something you're going to work on over the winter, so these plants won't be able to go outside until, late spring.
Right, right.
But it certainly is possible, yes.
So there is a chance.
There is. The next step, of course, is if you're planting them outside, are they hardy enough for our winters to survive? And that's a question mark.
Okay.
Depending on the variety.
Christine, thanks a lot for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. It's the Vox Pop Gardening Show today. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward here today with you, and Doug in Grafton. Doug, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, I want to talk about the upsurge in the grafted tomatoes. I know the commercial growers use them a lot, and I'm wondering if you had any grafted tomato sales, or if it's turning upward in the sales for the residential users?
Absolutely no sales for us at this time. We do not offer any grafted tomatoes.
I've been grafting for 3 years.
Yep.
And I see a tremendous improvement in the production and disease resistance of the tomato plants.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. So do you want to tell us how you do that?
Well, you take a resistant rootstock, which is a rootstock from an antique tomato, and it's been hybridized just for the roots,
yep.
Where most hybrid tomatoes and even the heirlooms are kept and hybridized for the fruits, where this is just for the roots.
Correct.
And you grow that up along with your favorite tomato plant alongside it or in the same area. You get to both of them to a stem that's about 2 millimeters in diameter. Then you slice it at a 60-degree angle, put the two of them together with a plastic clip, and put them in what I call a hospital bed for about 3 days at dark, 80 degrees and 100% humidity.
Great.
Then it does most of the healing there. Then you have to bring it back out into ambient light. And what I do is I step it up in the foot candles for a few days until I can put it back out into the greenhouse itself. And it'll take about 10 to 14 days longer for your transplant from seed to do this grafting and healing operation.
Right.
Great.
Right.
And you've noticed that an improvement with the disease resistance on the fruit from the rootstock like that, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
There's a couple different kinds of rootstocks. Estamino is primarily for outside growing, and Maxifort would be for the greenhouse growers. And the rootstock is resistant to the verticillium and fusarium. And I've found that the grafted tomatoes are even more resistant to the early blight.
Oh, there you go.
Great.
Well, Doug, thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah,
we appreciate it. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Barbara in Wurtsboro. Barbara, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I have a beautiful, beautiful maple tree, about 50 years old, kind of the center of my whole property, and it seems to have verticillium wilt, I think. Is it a goner?
Well,
all the leaves are off it already.
Yeah, well, it doesn't mean it has verticillium wilt. It may. Do you know what kind of maple it is?
Sugar maple.
Did the leaves sort of get crinkly and then start to kind of fall off, or did it more look like an actual, like, as if they had no water, like an actual wilt-type symptom?
Yeah, they just got brown and fell off.
Brown and fell off, yeah. So you're actually probably don't have verticillium wilt. This year has been a horrible year for maple foliar diseases because of all that wet weather that we had throughout most of the season. When people are, and actually I'm getting an unbelievable amount of questions on maple trees right now, because when you drive around and you look at all these trees that look like they're just browning out, you probably see that around your area quite a bit. A lot of other maples are probably showing that kind of symptom, I'm betting, in your neighborhood. And a lot of that is almost all related to the wet weather early in the season, not related to the 1 month of dry weather that a lot of people think is the culprit. And I'm not going to say it is not verticillium wilt, because maple trees are susceptible to it, especially sugar maples. But if it's a relatively healthy tree and it has been right along, usually healthy trees don't just get verticillium wilt. And this year, like I said, you across the board, if I had a bet, I would say it's a foliar disease based on
That's
the wet weather early in the
like
season.
A leaf scorching disease?
It's like a leaf scorch,
yeah.
Yep. And it looks really bad. It does look like it's actually caused from like massive amounts of drought. But it is actually just like a fungal disease that runs its course. You probably won't have that again next year unless we have a similar growing year. And one way to just help get some of the inoculum or those spores away from the tree is just rake the leaves up. And this time I probably would recommend not composting them. You might want to bag them and send them away to the town.
And probably watering this tree.
It would certainly help,
would be
yeah.
very helpful
yep.
this time of year, as
yep.
we talked about before.
Yep, watering any tree, this time of year is going to be helpful for next year's leaf out. But I do think your tree is going to be fine. I don't think it's a goner. I think it's a disease that probably, if you did nothing, would end up not doing much to the tree, and next year it'd look probably quite good when it comes out. So,
all right, Barbara.
Fingers crossed.
Well, thank you for the call, Barbara. Let's go to Harriet in Woodstock. Harriet, you're on.
Well, hi. I have just about the same question.
Oh, yeah.
I have a huge, but huge maple right next to the house.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happened. I call her Mother Maple.
Okay.
And this is what happened to that tree this year. It's the first of all the trees around are kind of still green. And this one just, the leaves started falling and falling and falling.
Yep.
And that has never happened before.
Yep. It's going to be the same answer that I gave the other woman a minute ago. Yep. It's a foliar disease. And even if it's not a sugar maple, even if it's a Norway maple and even silver maples and even red maples, I've even seen this type of thing happening. It's not the same pathogen that's causing it. Like on Norway maple, it's a leaf spot that's kind of run rampant. And then on sugar maples, it's more of a leaf scorch that's doing it.
Yeah.
But very much similar and same kind of.
They curled up. They did cut. They curled up and they brown and paper, they kind of fall apart. Papery, dusty kind of thing.
Yep, yep. It's so just, and most of that happened in the last month or so, probably significantly worse, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So just you could rake those leaves up, like I said, and bag them and sort of send them to the town dump or whatever. I wouldn't want to compost them, even though if you did and you didn't even rake them up, you probably wouldn't have this big of a problem next year anyways, but it just a little extra help.
Okay. So no need for panic.
Not at all. No.
Nope.
And again, we mentioned water. I know this sounds like a really big tree, but if you irrigate those trees, if you're interested in that, that will sort of help them, give them a little boost for next year.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward are here. It's the Garden Show on Vox Pop. Teresa in Albany. Teresa, you're on.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Last fall, we had new landscaping in front of our house, and I put in rhododendrons and azaleas and some hydrangeas and a butterfly bush. And I'm wondering how late in the season should I fertilize, because I'm concerned because they're new to my, soil.
Yep.
And I've been fertilizing every other week all summer.
So
how deep into the fall should I continue to fertilize?
So what are you putting on now? What have you been fertilizing with?
Well, Miracle-Gro for, rhododendrons. It's got, the right kind of stuff. That I didn't buy organic, which I would prefer, but I just saw this stuff on a shelf and grabbed it, and it seems to be working well. Everything's very healthy.
So probably I can speak for Fred as well, that we would both recommend that when you start the fertilizing process again, and that does not necessarily have to happen any longer this year, we're probably going to suggest you move it to spring, that you use a dry granular fertilizer, something that you would not mix with water first and spray or water the plants with, but something you'd put directly on the ground.
And you could get an organic variety of that. In fact, organic is better.
And this is something you would do.
I'm sure it is.
you could definitely do just once, and you could do it more than once if you want. But this would be an April May application, and then for say the hydrangea, which are fairly aggressive, maybe a July 1st application could help them. And fall can work.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with fall, and this we're hitting the time that it would be a good time. This month coming October is a pretty nice month, and so if you wanted to go ahead and do that now, but the water soluble fertilizer is great if you're willing to do that consistently as you did. But otherwise, it's just like giving them hors d'oeuvres and not a full meal.
Yep, and the
I see.
Yep, the solubles work. Those water soluble ones work really, really well when you have containerized plants. The soil has a major buffering action on fertilizer, and it just dissipates. It's like Greg said, just a little snack.
Yeah.
And yes, it will keep things healthy, but if you put the fertilizer down that we suggest, like a granular organic, in the spring,
it lasts longer.
It'll last all the way till fall, and then in the fall, after the leaf drop through the month of October, you could do it again. And I've done that. Anytime you want to make a plant bigger, especially newer or newly installed trees and shrubs, a lot of times the goal is let's make them bigger. spring and fall is a really great time to do that. And our granular. The fall will, the roots will continue to take that fertilizer in all the way till the ground pretty much freezes. So,
and that water soluble fertilizer, as you said, for containers specifically for annuals, for
works really well for that.
Perennials, even if they are in the ground.
Yep.
If you do that, especially May, June, early July, really does give them a boost.
It all does. Right.
Before our next break, we'll tackle an email here from Maitri, who writes, "How do Chinese lanterns turn red? At long last, we are finally having quality yield on our Chinese lanterns. We want to know how best to ensure that all of the lanterns turn red. Do the experts know what factors bring the lanterns from green to red? Should we leave them on the stem until that happens and risk squirrel damage, or cut them before they have all gotten red? Do they want water now?"
Well, they probably want water now because everything
does. Everything wants water.
Everything, fall color sort of comes because the chlorophyll pigment, that is the green pigment, starts to dissipate and break down and stop being produced. And these other pigments are pre-existing or are starting to be made. And with flowers and fruit, it's the one that's starting to be made now and show color. And so it's really just about being patient on the Chinese lanterns. I think they're well on their way. I would definitely irrigate the bed and just be patient.
Yep. Okay. And with fall color, it's unpredictable. So some certain environmental conditions could factor in, and then it makes it either nice really or nice red, or some years it just doesn't get as good.
But that little flower guy should work well. It will turn orange.
Yep.
It will.
It is Vox Pop. It is The Gardening Show with Greg Ward and Fred Breglia and yours truly, Ray Graff. We'll take a quick break and then back to the phones we will go at 800-348-2551.
Support for WMC comes from Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany. Japanese, Chinese, and sushi bar, dinner entrees served with soup, salad, and shrimp appetizers, delivery to Greater Albany, including Gilderland, 518-432-0358. Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans, hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons, grapesandgrainswine.com. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. And the Poughkeepsie Public Library District, presenting the NEA Big Read, a community-wide celebration of reading, October 6th through November 10th, poklib.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you, along with Greg Ward and Fred Breglia. It is The Gardening Show, and our number here is 800-348-2551. Greg Ward, what's happening over at the nursery?
So, of course, fall is happening. Planting season is well upon us. We have a few classes coming up on Saturday the 14th. We have, it's kind of like this show, Fall Garden Problem Solving. We'll have a panel discussion. You come in, ask the questions you want to get answers to, and we'll solve it. It's going to be at 10 a.m. on the 14th of October. And then a very specific one, Houseplants 101 on the 21st at 10 a.m. Again, Saturday, 10 a.m. Same kind of thing, specific to houseplants. You have some houseplant questions,
terrific.
Come on in. Those are free. And then moving on to November, though we could say this one again, I might be here. November 4th, we'll have a terrarium assembly, making a terrarium all by yourself.
Oh, neat. Bring the kids.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be fun. Fred, what's going on over at the Arboretum? I know you're maniacal about rodent protection.
Yeah, well, you know, we finished a fall sale, and every time the fall sale's over, the thing that we sort of get into with plants on the grounds that we always urge people to do, and we've been plugging the water, so I'm not going to beat that one up anymore. But rodent protection is a good time of year to put it down. And when, we always get calls, you know, voles and moles. The moles are really just eating grubs, so they're a lot less of a problem. The voles do girdle plants, and not only voles, we have rabbits and other critters like that. And we also have the big guys, the deer, who come in. And numerous bucks at the Arboretum, and it's evident by the buck scrubs that you'll often see on a lot of our newly installed plants. So what we do as a preventative this time of year is October 1st, we start literally putting in rodent protection. And I've created these little hardware cloth vole guards that are like collars that go around the base of younger trees. And by putting those in this time of year, you'll ensure that your tree does not get girdled over the winter. And we leave them in place from pretty much month of October, and we take them off probably sometime in March, end of March. And we've had really, really good luck. I don't think I've ever had a plant girdled that has had a vole guard installed.
Uh-huh.
So cherries, peaches, plums, pears, lindens, all of those guys are prone to
this
damage.
Is hardware cloth, you said. That's that kind of half-inch square metal.
You got it. It's metal. It's exactly a half-inch square.
Sharp around the edges, right?
It can be sharp around the edges.
I cut myself pretty good with that stuff.
You can, absolutely. Sometimes gloves
very
needed.
Very effective, though.
I use a pair of just tin snips, and I'll cut them to size. You buy a big roll of it at the hardware store.
Yeah.
It's cheap. And I don't have any patents on this guy, so by all means, you don't need to give me any props for that. But put them around, cut to order, and either a little wire or a little zip tie to kind of close it.
About
and I
how
like
high?
To, I usually go like 6 to. If you went 1 foot, you're in pretty good shape because that'll take care of most rabbits too. And the more important thing is actually to scrape away the mulch around the base of that tree and install it if you can, just kind of like an inch or two down. And I've actually even used made sort of like tent stakes that kind of anchor it down to the ground, and then I put the mulch back. And what we find is if it's down 2 inches. The vole tries to go under the mulch to get it. It hits hardware cloth or the metal wire, and it instantly it is not that persistent. Mm. So it's not going to say, "Well,
not
I didn't get it at 2 inches."
Yeah.
It's not the smartest critter.
Have you ever run into an exceptionally ambitious mole vole that would go below the 2-inch barrier?
Like I said, if it had a hardware cloth installed by me, I've never had a tree girdled. So
braggadocio about the whole thing? Huh? All right, listen. Before we get back to the phones, here's one that came in via email from Sarah, who says, stilt grass, it is throttling my iris, which I believe is still a sin in the Catholic Church. My ferns and just about everything else, I pull it up by the roots, but it has me outnumbered. What can be done about stilt grass? From Sarah.
Well, it's sort of the same thing that you're dealing with bishop's weed, with some of the that kind of wild campanula that jumps around. It's very difficult to get those out unless you sort of renovate the garden. You pull up the iris, you clean. I mean, this is a great time to do this these things. You take up these plants, you clean up the bed, you really find all of the roots of that stilt grass, and then you re-amend and replant, and you'll be in good shape.
Right.
The alternative is herbicides. There are herbicides you can use to sort of touch here and there without touching the plants you like. So it's your choice.
Fair enough. Back to the phones we will go. And Linda in Chatham. Linda, you're on.
Hi there. So thankful you took my call. I'm looking out my window at two lovely little pear trees. I moved here 3 years ago, and I noticed right away that one of them in particular was showing, didn't look too good. It had a lichen growing on the lower branches, and I asked a friend who's a botanist, and he said, oh, no, it's fine, whatever. So last year they looked a little worse as my third year, and this year the one of them in particular just looks like it needs to be cut down. It's just all the branches are all dead. There's a couple lower ones that still look alive. The other one, its twin, is a little bit better off, but is there anything I can do short of cutting these damn things down?
Yeah, well, first I would let you know that your botanist friend was right when he said the lichen is not really a problem. The lichen is not related to a decline.
Yeah.
A lot of times you'll see lichen on trees that are declining, because there's more light available that are getting into the tree's trunk. And all the lichen really is looking for is a place to grow.
Side effects, yeah.
Yeah, it's just looking for a place to grow. It's on healthy trees. It's on dead trees. It's on rocks. And it's a good sign of air quality, they say, because lichen needs relatively good air. So let's get back to the tree.
Go ahead.
So anyways, with the tree, I would ask you a few quick questions. First, the decline that you noticed, was it sort of a top-down decline? So the tip first and then...
Yeah, I do think so,
That's
yeah,
what I suspected. Yep. So that's probably almost guaranteed related to something to do with the roots. And it may very well be bad planting. When I say bad planting, it may be too deep. That would be what I suspect.
Uh-huh.
So if you went down the trunk...
These have probably been here for about 20 years.
Okay. Bad planting is a slow killer unless it's really bad planting, in which case it kills much quicker. But I've seen matured maple trees, 50 years old maple trees, one next to each other, one perfectly good health, the other one completely declined, and that one actually declined because it was planted 50 years ago a little too deep, and as time went on, it created the problem. Now, it may not be planted too deep. One of the ways you'll know, look at the trunk. Trunk comes down and meets the roots. There's a noticeable flare that pops out there. If you ever looked in the woods, all trees have these sort of flared out zones where their trunk meets the roots. And my guess is when you look at your pears, you don't see that. You see straight trunk going into ground.
That, I kind of think that's what they are.
Yep. Which it tells you two things. One is it's guaranteed it's planted too deep. Two, it may also sometimes from being planted too deep create issues with girdling roots. So you might have some girdling roots. Yeah. You also may have had those plants 20 years ago installed as containerized plants. The containerized plants, if they don't scarify the roots or kind of rough up the outside of the roots, they'll just start and they're kind of circling. You've seen that maybe when you pull a plant out of a container, they're kind of circling.
Sure.
That's going to, if you plant it like that, it stays like that forever.
So, no, you have to.
Hang on, Linda.
I'm sorry. Greg is going to impart some wisdom.
I was just
going to
say that if the top of the trees have died back significantly, and you said these are pear, either eating pear or ornamental pear? We're not sure.
I have no idea. I moved here 3 years ago. There's never been a single pear on it.
My guess is
ornamental pear. And if the top has declined, you know, so you have dead wood, literally dead wood at the top, it probably is pretty much finished.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, listen, Linda, we have to move it along. We have so many calls. And before we do that, we had an email from Jack who writes, how does one get rid of creeping Charlie in a lawn? I'll take that one. Restraining order. Right. No. How do you do that very quickly?
So mechanically, you can't. It comes up pretty quickly because it's a vine, and it usually shows up in areas that have been where the soil has been compacted or damaged or cut too short. So though that area does need some work anyway, you rough it up. You maybe add some compost. You reseed. That will work pretty well to compete with it. And then of course there's the weed and feed aspects. The lawn herbicides will help control that. That is a tough weed to kill. So the former application of pulling it up would be highly recommended.
All right, let's go to Lee in Albany. Lee, you're on.
Oh, hi. I was forgot my question.
Oh, you see, it was so long, and I apologize. You know, it's
late. No, don't worry about it. I was enjoying the show. I think my first, I have a few problems, but I'll just go with the one I'm looking at. I have two clematis plants, two new ones, and I still haven't planted them, and I don't have any trellis-like area or fence area. Can I just plant them in the garden and hope that they'll just flow over the soil?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you'll want to put something there to have them grow
like
up.
Like rocks.
How about some bamboo stakes?
Oh,
make
stakes.
a little teepee, three or four stakes. Tie them at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And plant that thing right
underneath.
It
has to be bamboo?
It doesn't
metal?
Have to be bamboo. It could be any kind of wood.
Well, it has to be wood, though.
Well, no, it could be something
metal
artificial,
tends to heat
too.
Up, and so it's better if it's not metal.
Oh, interesting.
Or if it's metal, it's coated, you know, like a polycarbonate.
And I hate to advocate another plastic piece in the yard, so.
So,
I can make some
wood
little teepees and some large rocks, maybe, and...
If you really want to go with the rock thing, that would be okay. But I would, you know, they want to go up, give them some altitude.
Okay.
Yep. But if you look online for like easy trellises, there's some really simple ones to make and not hard to do. And just a note about clematis, they like their sort of roots in a shady area and their foliage in the sun.
Okay.
Yep. So if you have the option for that, you'll do better.
All right. Let's go over to Paul in Saratoga. Paul, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling to ask for the most effective way to get rid of crabgrass.
Okay. What about creeping Charlie?
So crabgrass is an annual. It's there today in your garden looking really good because it does like fall. It's set up these flower heads that are now forming seed. That seed is ripening and will drop off. So we're getting to this kind of late place to kill the crabgrass because as soon as we get a frost, it's going to be dead anyway. That seed will sit there until spring and germinate in the spring. So one of the best things to do is to overseed your lawn now. Typically, fall is an excellent time to do this. We get some consistent rains and everything happens. We're probably at the last best time, even in Saratoga, for that to happen, as long as we get a little rain. So again, maybe doing a little dethatching. That can happen with just a rake, raking up the lawn a little bit. A little bit of compost spread over the lawn does wonders. Overseeding, that means just spreading some new grass seed lightly that will germinate this year and be there in the spring. In the spring, there are some organic pre-emergent weed controls. Usually corn gluten is the active ingredient that you could put down before the crabgrass germinates. And because you got the lawn going this fall, it'll still look pretty good. So as the crabgrass tries to germinate in late April and May, this corn gluten product will inhibit that germination. There are more traditional products that do essentially the same thing as well. So that's all I have to say.
Okay. Well, Paul, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551, but we're almost at the end of the show. We have so many calls. We'll try to get through as many as we can. Marilyn in East Otis. Marilyn, you're on.
Hi. So good to hear your voice. I have several questions, but I know we're close to the end. I'm trying to get them all in, if you can give me this information.
All right.
I purchased a wisteria plant many years ago with Greg at Ward's, and they're growing. The leaves are growing beautifully and a lot, very huge arbor. The only thing is, it's about 5 years now. I don't have any flowers coming through, and I wondered if that's because I'm not fertilizing it, and I wanted to know what I should be doing for that. That's my number one question.
Okay.
Well, wisteria, not the case for fertilizer. Pruning heavily, I found the best flower results on wisteria. You got the...
Yeah, I mean, it probably is all about pruning, Marilyn, and if you wanted to stop in sometime, we could just sort of give you a rundown on what to look for. Late fall through the winter is a really good time to do it, because you could prune them pretty much any time, so you'll have plenty of time to do this. And it's really about looking for the spurs that the flower buds will be hopefully hiding in this, and by pruning it back to those spurs, you will hopefully stimulate some flower growth.
Okay, Marilyn, I'm sorry to say we'll have to move it along, but maybe you can go see Greg and ask your other questions. We're almost at the end of the program here, and I want to go over quickly to Ann in Altamont. Ann, you're on.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question about fruit trees, and you may have answered it with an earlier woman with the pear trees, but I'm noticing I have three apple trees on my property that are dying.
Yep.
I also have a pear tree that, it started with one branch, and that might have been July, and then all of a sudden slowly the whole tree is died off. And I've noticed traveling around the Hudson Valley and the Albany area, I've seen other trees with the same affliction. I'm just wondering what's going on.
Yeah, well, to clarify, if it is what is going on around the area, and you're right, it's everywhere. Crab apples are looking the worst I've seen in a long time. It's all foliar diseases. They're all the same foliar disease, just to clarify. They are different pathogens that are creating this, but they're mostly all fungal related from the early wet season. Well, most of the season that's been wet. And a lot of the apples, for example, are apple scab and things like that. They're just creating defoliation.
This tree is not dead.
No, the tree, that's what I was going to get with. It's not killing the trees. It's just taking leaves and making them drop prematurely. So if you are in doubt and thinking that your branch may be dead, scratch the wood with your finger or a little knife or a pruner. And if you see green, you're good. And the good thing about these foliar diseases is that it's not going to create any long-term effect on the plants. So all these apples and pears, and majority of them are all coming back next year looking really good. Rake up the leaves. Get those leaves, like we had mentioned before, into a garbage bag, especially with the crab apples. They're even more prolific in terms of populating spores next year to infect those leaves again. So get those leaves out this fall. Don't compost them. Don't leave them. Don't let them break down. Get them off-site. Good news is most of these trees are all going to look really good next year. Unless we have a really, really wet year, it's going to not look like this again for quite some time.
All right. And thank you very much. We have 1 minute. Shall we take one more call here?
Sure. Let's try it.
All right. You pick a number.
Let's do 9.
Let's go to line 9. And Amy in Albany, you're on.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a question about trimming, pruning hydrangeas. I know they're very popular, but I just got my first one a few years ago. It was this beautiful round bush and had beautiful, colorful blooms. And at the end of the season, I trimmed back what appeared to be dead. And lo and behold, the next year, I had no flowers. So okay. I did a little bit of studying and learned that the buds come from the old growth sort of thing. And now I have this massive hydrangea bush that's beautiful, but I really need to cut it back, and I don't want to kill the flower buds again.
Okay. In 15 seconds.
So really, really quickly, I just want to say this. There's a lot of different types of hydrangeas. There's an awesome site that I recommend people go to. It's called Hydrangeas, hydrangeas.com. It explains all the differences, all the different kinds, and the different types of pruning and when. Greg, go.
Yeah, cut it in half. And wait till spring.
Okay, Amy, that'll be the last one. And wow, so many calls we did not get to today. And I apologize sincerely to everybody. We do the best we can, right?
We do.
Well, guys, thanks for being with us today. Support comes from Interim Healthcare for 46 years, offering in-home assisted living for individuals, companions, aides, and nurses serving the greater Capital Region, Columbia, and Saratoga counties on Glens Falls. InterimHealthcare.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated for over 50 years, offering indoor and outdoor plants, gardening supplies, organic fertilizer, and advice, hadleygardencenter.com. And Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, featuring new styles for 2017 eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. Thanks again to Fred Breglia and Greg Ward for being with us today. Thanks to you for the great calls and the great emails. And again, I'm sorry if we didn't get to you. We'll do it again very soon. Gardening show, always a popular one. We'll bring the boys back one more time at least. Thanks to Zach Malloy for being our engineer. He did a pretty good job. Nicely done. Thanks to Deb Malik for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. Amy Halloran is here. Secure the lawn furniture. It'll be a crazy program.